At the height of the pandemic in New York City, one family's loss compounded by chaos.
They went through the list of all the bodies they'd retrieved from the funeral home and from the trucks, and Nathaniel Hallman's name was not on the list. So for days and days, she couldn't find out where he was.
Today, we'll tell the heartbreaking story of how Nathaniel's family found him and brought him home. It's Friday, July 24th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. A new twist in the changing rules for foreign students studying in the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement says newly enrolling international students won't be allowed into the country if all of their courses are being taught online. Students already enrolled in the U.S. will be allowed to stay, even for online-only classes. The clarification comes after ICE rescinded rules last week that would have forced foreign students to leave the country if their schools moved classes entirely online. Goldman Sachs has reached a nearly $4 billion settlement with the government of Malaysia for its role in the alleged theft of billions of dollars from a government investment fund known as 1MDB. Our reporter Liz Hoffman has more on one of the worst scandals in the bank's history.
The allegations against Goldman are basically that the bank turned a blind eye to red flags with 1MDB and that it failed to oversee two of its senior bankers who have been accused, and in one case pled guilty, of being part of the scheme. It's important to note that the settlement today does not resolve an investigation into Goldman by the U.S. Department of Justice, which still wants its pound of flesh. We reported late last year that the DOJ was seeking a guilty plea from the bank or a subsidiary and wanted to install someone to overhaul its compliance procedures.
For our full coverage of the 1MDB scandal, head to WSJ.com or the WSJ app. And the price of gold hit a new closing record today. Gold futures for delivery next month rose 0.4% to $1,897.50 for a troy ounce. That's the standard measure for precious metals. The price of precious metals has soared during the pandemic as more investors seek safe haven in commodities. Coming up after the break, one family struggled to find their loved one lost in the epicenter of the pandemic. There are images and stories from the pandemic that will be seared into many people's memories forever. One of them was the discovery in April of rental trucks holding dozens of dead bodies outside a funeral home in New York City. The people found that day were victims not just of the coronavirus, but of a system overwhelmed. One of them was 72-year-old Nathaniel Hallman. He lived in the Bronx with his wife, Mitzi. They were married for 42 years. He repaired Whirlpool appliances. And in retirement, he and his wife were a deacon and deaconess at the Church of the Meek Baptist in Harlem. They visited the sick and shut-ins. In early April, at the height of the pandemic in New York City, Hallman was at a rehab center in the Bronx, where he was diagnosed with COVID-19. They sent him to the hospital next door, where a few weeks later, he succumbed to the disease. But that's not where the story ends. It's where it begins. Our reporter, Michael Phillips.
He died on April 17th at St. Barnabas Hospital, and his goddaughter, Hope, who is a very astute person, decided she would take responsibility for, you know, making sure that he was cremated and taken care of, and so his wife, his widow, Mitzi, wouldn't have to do it. And so Hope was under the impression that she had only 7 days to get his body in the hands of a funeral director, or the hospital would give the body to the city, and the city would bury him in a mass grave on Hart Island, which is the potter's field for New York City. You know, for 150 years, the people have been left behind, have been buried on Hart Island. And so she thought, okay, I've got a week to find somebody to take care of the body. And she started calling funeral homes, and they were all full. This was the height of the epidemic. You know, hundreds and hundreds of New Yorkers were dying a day. On the day that Nathaniel died, 384 New Yorkers died. And so the funeral homes were just overloaded. She called something like 20 funeral homes, and they all said, we can't take him. Her middle son was even doing an internship at a Newark, New Jersey funeral home, and they were too full to take Nathaniel's bodies. So she grew more and more panicky over the course of the week, and she contacted a family friend, a reverend up in Connecticut, Marshall Morton. And Reverend Morton being in the, you know, the business of being a clergyman, knew a number of funeral home directors, called up an old contact that he had named James Robinson. Mr. Robinson worked out of a funeral home in Neptune City, New Jersey, as well as one in Brooklyn. And so he said, according to Reverend Morton, "I'll take care of this for you. I've got it. And please take the body down to my funeral home in Neptune." So the Reverend and Hope's son managed to find a funeral director who could drive the body out of New York to Neptune, New Jersey, Neptune City, and deliver it just before what Hope thought was the deadline at the hospital to get the body out of there. So they took the body to Neptune City. Mr. Robinson, the funeral director, was not there. A person who was there said, "I'm sorry, I can't accept this body." They called up Mr. Robinson, the funeral director, and this is where there's a lot of disagreement about what took place. But from the point of view of the family and Reverend Morton, what happened was Robinson said, "I didn't mean for you to take it to New Jersey. Take it to my place in Brooklyn." This is something that Mr. Robinson disputes. He says he never said such a thing. The driver took the body up to Brooklyn to a funeral home called Cleckley Funeral Services on Utica Avenue in Brooklyn. He dropped the body off there with the people who were there. They put it in a refrigerated truck, which was parked on the street. And the family assumed everything was okay at that point. The body was supposed to be cremated on the 29th, so a few days later. And when Hope called the crematory to ask whether or not her godfather had been cremated, she got an answering machine saying, "We're closed for maintenance." The next day, she got another answering machine message, but never received confirmation he had been cremated. During this time, news broke about all these bodies in Brooklyn in U-Haul trucks, and that was the same address where they had dropped off Mr. Hallman. So Hope began to panic and put things together. She called up the Reverend. The Reverend put things together. They all started to worry. And at that point, they tried to get Mr. Robinson to explain where the body was. They tried to get Cleckley's funeral home to explain where the body was. They tried to get the city medical examiner to explain where the body was. And they just couldn't find it. It took until the 5th of May until Hope finally learned that her godfather's body, Nathaniel Hallman's body, had actually been in the back of an unrefrigerated U-Haul truck left on the street in Brooklyn.
Just a horrible, horrible discovery. And it wasn't the end for Nathaniel's family, who then spent several weeks trying to get his body and arrange for his final resting. What happened after this?
There was another misstep. When the bodies were discovered at the Cleckley Funeral Home in the U-Haul trucks, Hope called the city medical examiner's office, and they had come over, you know, when the police got there and after a 911 call reporting bodies in trucks on the street. You know, Hope called everybody she could find, the governor's offices, the attorneys general of the states of New Jersey and New York, you know, "Where's my godfather?" And when she called the medical examiner's office, they had already collected 61 bodies from the trucks and from Cleckley's funeral home itself, including many that were simply on the floor in various states of undress and on the floor of the chapel at the funeral home. It was just loaded with bodies. And so when she called the medical examiner's office, they went through the list of all the bodies they'd retrieved from the funeral home and from the trucks, and Nathaniel Hallman's name was not on the list. So for days and days, she couldn't find out where he was. She even went over with Reverend Morton to the Cleckley funeral home. Mr. Cleckley was not there at the time. Mr. Robinson was not there at the time. And she said, "My father was here. Where is he?" And couldn't get an answer. And what happened was, on the 5th of May, the medical examiner's office discovered that the name on his paperwork had been reversed as Hallman Nathaniel. So when they had looked up the bodies they had, when Hope had called and they had looked in their records to see, well, what bodies do we have? Do we have a Nathaniel Hallman? It came up as a negative. They only had a Hallman Nathaniel. And by the 5th of May, they figured this out. And now, remember, he died on the 17th of April. So we're now weeks into this. And only then does Hope discover that, in fact, her godfather had been in one of the trucks and was now in the care of the medical examiner's office. At that point, the medical examiner said, "Look, we have him safe. He's in, you know, in cooled units, so he's, you know, he won't decay, to be blunt about it. you can leave him here until you find a funeral director who's able to cremate him, which is what the family wanted to do. So they held on to him, and it wasn't until 5 weeks after his death, I think 39 days exactly after his death, that they were able to get him cremated. And now his ashes are in an urn that his widow, Mitzi, keeps at her bedside.
Michael, what else did you hear from city officials in response to this, as well as from the Cleckley Funeral Home?
The state authorities suspended Mr. Cleckley's license to act as a funeral director and then held a series of hearings, online hearings, to decide whether to permanently revoke his license for, you know, poor practices. The ruling has not yet come out. They've had three hearings and the lawyers have submitted final closing statements, but the administrative law judge has not yet ruled on whether to revoke his license. In listening to at least one of those hearings and in talking to Mr. Cleckley's attorney, he's basically, the argument is, they were holding the bodies in the U-Haul trucks as they were moving them from the refrigerated truck, which was a recognized way to hold bodies, into the funeral home to be packaged up for cremation. And so he just said, we just would keep them in the U-Haul trucks for a while and then move them. It was hard, I think, for the prosecuting attorney, or I guess he'd be called a prosecuting attorney, to understand that, because the argument is, why not just move them from the refrigerated truck all the way into the funeral home instead of stopping? This is just a matter of a few yards, instead of stopping and putting them in a truck. So that's Mr. Cleckley's defense, as well as his lawyer, said to me, look, the whole city was inundated with bodies. There just wasn't enough space to handle them all. And so things happened. And he said that he thought it was unfair that his client, Mr. Cleckley, was being singled out when so many other funeral homes were also overcrowded in his argument. So that is his defense. Mr. Robinson's defense, he has not been charged with anything by the state. He has not been, his license has not been suspended. But in talking to him, his argument is, I never had that body. I never signed any paperwork saying that body was under my control. So everyone who says that I did agree to take control of Mr. Hallman's body is lying. That is his argument. There are text messages back and forth in which he says that he would take care of the body, but he also said, and give me the paperwork. So there's now a lawsuit underway. Mitzi Hallman and Hope Dukes, who is the goddaughter of Nathaniel Hallman, have filed suit against the Cleckley home as well as Mr. Robinson, and are seeking damages for what they describe, of course, as mistreatment of Nathaniel's remains.
Michael, as you say, and as you've heard from many of the people in this story, Nathaniel's body was one of dozens discovered in rental trucks during the height of the pandemic. What did reporting out this story and what happened in this one case tell you about what happened here in New York at the height of this? So what are your takeaways from this tragic story?
This won't come as a surprise to anybody, but when the pandemic really hits, and when really hit New York hardest first, at least in the United States, of course, it just overwhelmed the system. The city and the people who manage these things were just not ready for it. It was overwhelming. The doctor was an internist resident at St. Barnabas Hospital who took Mitzi up to see Nathaniel before he died. She would cry constantly into her mask and goggles because there was just so much misery all around her. The same situation occurred with the bodies. It just, the city wasn't prepared for the awfulness that hit it. I can't judge whether they should have been more prepared or there was some mistake made at some point. That's not really within my capacity to judge, but certainly it was overwhelmed. And that meant that there's a lot of collateral damage, and Mitzi and Hope, and of course, Nathaniel himself were part of that collateral damage. And now I think between lawsuits and historians and journalists looking back at what happened, we'll start to peel that apart and figure out who did what, who could have done things that were, who could have done things better, and who did the best they could.
Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Phillips, thank you so much for your reporting and for joining me today to talk about this story.
Thank you.
You can read more about Nathaniel Hallman's life and death at WSJ.com. That's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Mark Stewart. The show was produced this week with help from Paolo Bossanin, Nora Eckert, Mark Garrison, Kateri Yoakum, Amanda Llewellyn, Charlie Turner, Sam Westren, J.R. Whalen, and Chris Sinsley. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.